A few months ago, on an unseasonably chilly day in Tampa, Florida, we had a chat with our friend Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated.
Check, baby, 1-2, check, Rex is in effect, and on the record, sorry.
You know Andy, he's known for his exquisite taste in food and his witty commentary on college football, so it's no wonder we talked to him about both.
In particular, we asked him about the college football coaching world. At the time, new coaches had been named at schools like Texas, Oregon, et cetera, Assistants were on the move all over the country. For fans, these hirings are a big deal, but the process itself, to us at least, is a mystery.
We asked him, what is the biggest misconception about how schools hire coaches?
So I would ask these ADs, like, how long did you spend with your coach? And they go, oh, 4 hours. Like, wait, for a job that is the highest paying state employee and the highest scrutiny of anyone at the university? Like, that's all we could do.
Nowadays, Dan, a Power Five athletic department, it's a rich operation. Some schools have a nine-figure operating budget with almost double in annual revenue. Serious college sports is serious business.
And football is obviously the biggest money sport. It bankrolls everything. So the coach who leads a program has a ton of responsibility. Is a short interview really enough? How do they know that they got the right guy?
They don't. That's the beauty of it. They have to act like they do, but they do not.
From the Solid Verbal, this is a special production. This is how coaches get hired.
So with that, it's my pleasure to announce to you the next head coach.
So with that, it's my pleasure to introduce to you our new head football coach.
So with that, please let me walk on.
Sooner or later, every school holds a press conference to introduce a new coach. It's supposed to be a celebration. The first time a coach is seen with his new school. Sort of like a couple being introduced for the first time as man and wife. It's symbolic.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times schools rush in. You know, the whole win the press conference thing, I think, is way overrated. You know,
that's like Bruce Feldman from Fox Sports. Bruce knows a thing or two about coaching searches. He's usually the one breaking the story. In Bruce's mind, the presser is great, but it's better to have an actionable plan. And the real plan starts long before a coach is officially introduced. In fact, a good athletic director always has a secret plan.
Every great AD I know, and the ones that will talk to me about the process, big school, small school, doesn't matter. The great ADs are always aware of the market.
And that's Stephen Godfrey from SB Nation. He's seen firsthand what goes on behind the scenes. He also happens to be one of the best storytellers you'll ever meet.
But because of the volatility of this industry, you're never not looking, okay? You're always aware of the market, and you're always looking at potential situations and things that could happen. And, you know, maybe you just hired this guy and he wants to be here for 10 years, but that one dream job is going to open in 2 years. So what's your plan B? I think most great ADs in their revenue sports have a plan B and a plan C every single year, even years that you would never think that there would be an issue. Everyone is always looking out at the greater landscape of the sport in terms of personnel.
Setting that plan into motion is not easy. Not with overzealous fans staking out potential candidates or tracking tail numbers of private planes.
Okay, you don't hire a search firm to give you a list of candidates. Google can give you a list of candidates. You hire a search firm for discretion, because that way when someone says, oh, have you talked to any coaches? You go, nope. And plausible deniability costs you about $125,000 right now.
What exactly is a search firm? You hear about these a lot when a coaching vacancy opens up. Firms like Parker Executive Search and Korn Ferry serve as a quiet intermediary to grease the wheels and make the hiring process go more smoothly. The key word, though, is quiet. As Andy said, search firms may be more about discretion than searching.
Now, for example, it came out when Sark got fired at USC that the search firm that had helped USC hire him had not vetted him that well.
Right.
Because there were things that people said, well, this was known in Washington.
Skeletons.
How did you not know that? Part of the deal, part of what you're paying for is the vetting process. And so that's what they're supposed to do.
Right.
It's not always what happens, but it is absolutely what they're supposed to do.
Steve Sarkisian was fired from USC on October 12th, 2015, after stories of ongoing alcohol abuse came to light. For the university, it was a black eye. Pat Hayden, USC's athletic director, defended the decision to hire Sark in the first place. After all, they'd done background checks and interviews with friends and colleagues. But he admitted that he hadn't done a public record search. Apparently, neither had USC's search firm.
I do think that you're seeing people hedge their bets and also play a little bit of CYA. I don't know if you can say that. Cover your ass with bringing in hiring committees. A lot of blame shifting that can go on there after the fact, where you don't, as an AD, some ADs don't like that. Some ADs absolutely hate it. They are going to live and die with the guy that they pick. But a lot of times that's not the case, or the president wants to get involved, or the top level booster wants to get involved. I think the biggest problem that you see is too many cooks in the kitchen up front. And if you don't have a singular vision in what you want for a head coach, it's going to be very hard to nail down what you liked about the series of candidates that you got to talk to and maybe make a couple offers to. So you want to have a vision that everyone can share and trust in.
Okay. So it comes down to the vision. How hard could it be? Just build a better team, more wins, a flashier offense, a more tenacious, aggressive defense. Oh, and build it with a guy that everybody likes, maybe an alum that really knows the lay of the land.
Visions are aspirational. They can be hard to pin down, especially when you've got high stakes and there are other influential people in the room. If you are an athletic director, you got to get the vision right or you get the hell out of town.
I find that a lot of times schools want to hire the exact opposite of the person they just fired. The fire Bo Pelini, hire Mike Riley is the prime example. You fire a guy who's, you know, if you're an AD who doesn't like a coach being mean to you, you hire the nicest coach in the world. That's what they did. We'll see if that winds up improving the program overall, but the jury's out. But that's one thing I find, from talking to some of the analytics folks, it seems like people put a little too much stock in having been at a school before, being our kind of guy, that sort of thing. That doesn't necessarily translate to success. The one thing that does over the years translate to success is hiring someone on the offensive side of the ball versus the defensive.
Philosophy is the key word to know, all the way down to recruiting.
That starts with your head coach, and that's something that ADs are now interested in now more than ever, because I think the respect and the acknowledgement of what recruiting does to your overall product, I just think that level of awareness has never been higher, especially with the people making the hiring decisions.
Philosophy extends to money, too. At the end of the day, what can you afford?
I remember when, I think it was Dan Mullen, or it was either Dan Mullen or Hugh Freeze was the final SEC West coach to hit the $4 million mark. And I remember seeing an SEC athletic director shortly after that. And the first words out of that person's mouth were, "We're all insane." And I was like, "Well, you guys can just not do it."
Yeah.
And they're like, "No, we can't."
The economics of this world, totally unsustainable. If we're going to continue this ongoing charade that everyone in college football bowl subdivision is on level footing, then someone needs to disrupt the model. And Andy knows it too.
I think there will be an AD who someday says, "I can find a young up-and-comer who will take $3 million. And you know what? That's probably, the probability of success is probably just as high as if I hire this guy who is demanding $4.5 million. You see it in the business world all the time where, you know, you do have to pay taxes and you don't always get more money.
Right.
And you don't have to spend every dime you make, where you should save some of it. And you'll see businesses that their model is exclusively, we hire young and cheap. We know you're leaving. We're going to train you to be good. And then the next group of young and cheap good people will come in and they'll work here for a year and they'll leave.
So you've got a vision. Now you got to find a coach.
Let's talk about how that matchmaking happens. But before we do, let's go all the way back to the beginning. We'll do that next.
Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. Fresh, high-quality ingredients. They make a real difference. It's important to know where your food comes from. Now, for less than $10 a meal, Blue Apron will deliver delicious, quality food courtesy of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. Plus, with Blue Apron's freshness guarantee, you can be sure that every ingredient in your delivery will arrive ready to cook, or they'll make it right. Some of the meals available in April include spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza with olives, bell peppers, and ricotta salata. Sweet and sour salmon with bok choy, carrot, and ginger fried rice. Parmesan-crusted chicken with creamy fettuccine and roasted broccoli. And baby broccoli and fontina paninis with hard-boiled egg and arugula salad. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/solid. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. One more time, that's blueapron.com/solid. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. The Solid Verbal is also supported by Indochino. Every guy looks better in a great-fitting suit. Indochino makes it easy to get a perfectly tailored suit at an incredible price. Choose from hundreds of top quality fabrics and even personalize your suit just the way you want it. Whether it's for work, a wedding, or another special occasion, Indochino has suited up hundreds of thousands of guys and are now the largest made-to-measure menswear brand in all the world. All you got to do is visit Indochino.com. That's Indochino.com. Or drop by one of their 9 North American showrooms. Then you pick from hundreds of fabrics and patterns and choose your customizations from lapels to pleats to jacket linings and much, much more. Then submit your body measurements and kick back and relax. Get ready to step into the best, most stylish suit you've ever worn in just 4 weeks. Right now, Solid Verbal listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $389. Go to Indochino.com and enter SOLID at checkout. That's 50% off regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit, plus the shipping is free. Indochino.com. Your promo code is SOLID. Any premium suit, just $389. Get ready to look like $1 million.
Nobody actually starts out as a big-time college football coach. To tell this story, we've got to start at the very beginning. How does an aspiring coach become a GA, a grad assistant? Here's Stephen Godfrey.
They go to events like the AFCA, which is American Federation of College Association. I'm not sure about it. I definitely know it's called AFCA. And they go, they're almost always ex-athletes. They probably played football somewhere. It doesn't really matter what level they played at. They start networking the same way that you would to get into any industry. They hand out resumes. They, you know, work every lead that they have. And then they take a really terrible job for a couple years. If they get on anywhere, it's probably going to be on a volunteer basis. It's going to be for maybe no money or maybe just some sort of laughable stipend to live on. And then you work your way up.
Man, this sounds a lot like being a journalism major.
Yup, exactly. There's more.
You attach yourself more often than not. Once you make a staff as a GA, you tend to attach yourself to one side of the ball and then maybe to a specific assistant coach. And then from there, that's how you start to develop relationships. And maybe, you know, maybe you're a GA on offense, but your dream is to be a defensive coordinator. That's going to happen a lot. You're going to go where they need you. So you have to be versatile up front. But eventually you start hopefully gravitating towards working for the kind of coaches that you would want to emulate one day and the kind of places that you would want to be one day. But that's an ideal situation. Some guys just GA for a long time and they can't really get on with the right staff.
I'm sort of blown away by how common this sounds. It sounds a lot like any college grad looking to catch on in just about any industry. My only question, how do you build a resume in this world? What would you even put on it?
It's a good question. Steven says it's about building a rep that gets people talking, establishing yourself as a coach that gets results, having a demeanor that might be compatible with someone else down the road. Also, helps if you can recruit and then develop those players.
Short of maybe offensive and defensive coordinators having to have some sort of structural schematic idea about them, some sort of philosophy that we can say in about one or two sentences, I think everyone else is going to live or die by their ability to recruit and then develop. Development is tricky. Development is something that if you ask different coaches, they're going to be very subjective about who they think can develop so-and-so. And all of them are going to tell you casually that you're going to look like a genius at developing talent if you have really good players to start with. So that's why I think it all goes back to recruiting and the reputation that you build there. I'd also add, in recruiting, you're going to interact with a lot of high school coaches. You're going to interact with junior colleges. You're going to talk to more than just other, coaches on your staff and rival coaches. Again, I can't overemphasize that, it's like a sewing circle in college football. It's like a big middle school lunchroom. There's a lot of gossip that goes on. And so, honestly, I think it has less to do with the merit that you present as it is over time who you get to know. That becomes paramount at a certain point in your career.
I guess it makes sense that networking would play such a huge role because it always plays a huge role in career planning. And recruiting is really just a different form of networking. But, sometimes it's weird when you're networking for you and not on behalf of somebody else. Sometimes that can be a little uncomfortable. Did Steven say anything about that?
He didn't, but Bruce did.
There's a coach who I think does a really good job, and he's now risen to the point where he's a decent-sized commodity as an assistant coach. And I've known him for a long time, and he never did the stuff where he wouldn't go to the coach's convention, or if he did, he would only hang out with guys he used to play with. Right. If I had introduced him, he was like kind of like just not very outgoing. Now he was I don't know if I would even say he was reticent, but he just didn't make a big effort. Okay. And he was a guy who was a good recruiter, but when it came to networking, and he's since learned, once he got into his 30s, I need to be that way more because it's for upward mobility and you never know who guys know.
Right.
So it's very like, it's my job, but it's also like it's a very relationship driven job. Who do you clinic with? Who do you learn from? And all those things. And then, if you ever find out like, why is this guy interviewing for this? Well, these guys work together, or this guy's friends with that guy. David Shaw's thing at Stanford is somebody on his staff has to have worked or has a relationship with the person they hire. It could be the greatest, like, and I'm not saying nobody knows Dave Aranda on it. Maybe there's somebody who worked with him at like Utah State or wherever, but he was like, if that connection, no matter how great the coach is, he said he wouldn't bring them on.
The coaching industry is a lot like other industries. You need to know the right people, but it's not without its own nuances. There isn't a tried and true path to success. Sometimes it's better maybe take a step back and then take a step forward later. Andy Staples said it best.
Things aren't always peachy, and if the next best thing comes along, take the next best thing and keep on moving to the next best thing. It's an industry built on people moving around.
I get that it's an industry built on movement. But most college football fans, Dan, we don't live in that world. From the outside in, it sounds a lot like coaches have a cork board with the yarn and the thumbtacks, and they're plotting years in advance like there's some sort of super opportunists. I asked Andy, are coaches constantly playing that game of three-dimensional chess with their careers?
I think everybody does it in the back of their heads, but I think the really good coaches don't do that very much consciously. I think it's just like any other job. You try to do a great job at the job you're at, and then opportunities will arise. If you spend a lot of time thinking about your next job or making moves towards your next job, you're probably not going to do your current job very well. And so I think there are probably some coaches that do get into that, but I would imagine for the most part, the ones that succeed and actually do hop up to another job. Like Tom Herman's a good example. I think Tom Herman knew in the back of his head if everything went great, he'd wind up the Texas coach. But I don't think he made a lot of decisions during the football season the last 2 years with an eye on being the Texas coach. I think he was trying to win a bunch of games at Houston. And if that happened, then good things would happen for him.
The answer is yes, just not in the egomaniacal sense we might think. Actually, it's pretty normal. Coaches pay their dues until they can afford to be picky. Some guys play it cool like Tom Herman. Others might be more aggressive. Some are content being assistants for their entire careers.
In a lot of cases, it's less about being opportunistic and more about just knowing the industry. Coaches are a product of the system, and the system is pretty disloyal. Keeping your eyes open for other openings, that's just smart.
You know, it's like a cross between fan fiction and some sort of like stats-based video game that these guys are playing in their head. It's amazing. They try and look at what the resources are. That's the number one thing. So I'm talking about the physical resources, facilities, and you know, weight rooms and stadiums. Then they're going to look at budget, both in terms of availability of funds for things like recruiting, but then also staffing positions. You know, what kind of budget do you have if I want to tear down everything in this building and put up new slogans and floor-to-ceiling prints and all this, you know, things that are going to hammer home my mantra to my players. Then once you look at what's there, you look at what you think you could do there, what you could bring in. Are there outside boosters who feel a little tepid about supporting the program? Can you win them over and get the cash flow higher immediately? Is there an interest in that kind of stuff? Are ticket sales good? Ticket sales, they don't necessarily care about the specifics of a box office, but they want to know what kind of support you have in the community, because coaches get very frustrated if there's a kind of a bland response in the immediate college town or city or wherever you're at, and then the fan base overall. They need that energy in recruiting probably more than they let on. They talk about all that. They look at all of that. But the number one thing there, after all of that is done, is one question, and that's, do I think I can win? Do I think I can win?
So your school might need a coach. And we know that an unnamed coach out there might even be willing to kick the tires. Enter agents.
One thing they're doing, they're managing their clients in terms of public perception. You know, what do people think about this guy? And they'll take the temperature quite a bit and try to figure out, okay, is there some way we can kind of boost his perception or boost people's perception of him as an offensive guru or some other way. So they're looking at that. They're also looking at what may come open. And then they are seeding the clouds in terms of getting in touch with those ADs, just touching base, just, you know, let you know, just in case you ever. And so a lot of it is research into what are these jobs that may come open? Who's on the hot seat?
From time to time, it can get, well, murky.
What's weird is, you know, with some of the bigger coaching agencies, like your Jimmy Sextons or your Trace Armstrongs, they've got so many clients that it may be they're looking at hot seat guys that are their clients potentially being replaced by their clients.
Assuming there's mutual interest and enough clandestine coordination, we've got ourselves a good old-fashioned interview, Dan. It's like any other job, really, but it's about a different topic. Schools will take this opportunity to compare their vision to a coach's philosophy. It's how they figure out if someone fits. Not everyone excels at the interview.
There's some of these guys that can, you know, they go in a recruit's living room and make magic, but they go in front of an AD and the president, and they're like, they clam up. Now, if they come in completely unorganized and they're, you know, just all over the place, that reflects on probably how they would perform as a football coach as well. But if they just don't talk well, I don't know if that's the factor you use to eliminate them. I think that's where you need to kind of dig a little deeper and figure out, okay, why is it like this? Is this something that will cause this person to not be able to do the job correctly because they're currently doing the job very well at a different level? So it's hard. I think it's really hard for the ADs, again, because they have that limited time with them, to figure out what's important, what matters. Like organizational skill, having a vision for the future, having a staff plan. Those are all things that are very concrete, and that a good coach, whether he's good at talking to people in suits or not, should be able to talk about very fluently.
There's a human element that comes into play too.
Let's say you're from the East Coast, you get a West Coast job, and that's going to uproot your family. But if it's with a guy that you know is going to treat you right, treat your family right, there's going to be a financial gain to it. You're going to uproot your family. The reality is that, I mean, coaching families are, it's some kind of bad version of military families. It really is. I don't know of any head coach who's just said flat out, well, I'm not going to take that job because of where it is, even though it's a great job, because my family doesn't want to live there. You adapt. You just do. It's the stark, brutal reality of the sport, because I think, I don't know if it's a secret or not, a lot of families don't move right away. Maybe one of the kids is in high school at the old place and they stay there for a couple of years. You can certainly, when you're talking about major college football jobs, you have enough money to maintain two households. I know of three first-year head coaches right now that are living in apartments with some of their assistant coaches for 6 months while, you know, the kids finish school and then the wives come out and look for houses. And so, gosh, you talk about a great opportunity for a feature story. That might be it.
From a school's perspective, it's sometimes about a different kind of recruiting philosophy.
When I was a beat writer covering Florida, they fired Ron Zook and hired Urban Meyer. One of the key factors in the recruitment of Urban Meyer was Christine Donovan. That's Billy Donovan's wife. She was the one who contacted Shelley Meyer and said, listen, this is what living in Gainesville is like. These are the schools your children would go to. This is what the community is like. This is what your life would be like. This is what your kids' life would be like. And when you get her on, because you got to get her on your side, you get her on your side, that is the most influential person to the coach we're talking about, mm-hmm. whether it's Urban Meyer or Nick Saban or anybody else. If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And that's one of the things that, you know, if you've got somebody who can help recruit the coach's spouse or the coach's kids, you're in good shape.
Above it all, there are sticking points. There's a pretty big emphasis on staff. It's where all that networking comes into play.
Money for assistants is probably actually a bigger sticking point than money for the coach. Most guys who got into that business never thought they'd make that kind of money. So they're not gonna go crazy if they don't get, you know, one more $100,000 or whatever. Some of them will. Some of them look at it as a respect thing. Mm-hmm. But it's like that in any industry. Right. But more of them will say, I need a bigger pool for my assistants. How much will you give me to hire my coordinators? Dabo Swinney is a great example. Dabo Swinney, if you look at his first contract after he was named the permanent head coach at Clemson, very low base salary, basically gave any extra money he would have gotten, he said, put in the assistant pool, right, because there were certain people he wanted to hire because he knew he could be successful if he got them on board. And I asked him about it one time. I said, why'd you do it this way? He said, well, I'm a walk-on coach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I want to earn my scholarship, I just need to do it. And it was a heavily incentive-based contract that if he won a bunch of games, he would make more money. And that probably helped elevate him over other candidates who are more experienced because he was going to cost less on the front end.
Right. In other words, if a coach gets a job, he needs to start building his tree immediately. It's the circle of life in the coaching world.
I would say the opposite of whatever side of the ball that you don't have the experience in, so you're a lifelong OC. I think the DC you hire, and then 1A is the recruiting coordinator. And then maybe 1B is a position coach that is sort of your lead recruiter that is from the footprint of your new job, wherever that might be. There are guys I know, there are coaches I know who are in jobs in areas of the country that don't have a lot of college football talent. You still need the local connection. You still need to develop the local identity, because sometimes it goes beyond just being able to recruit 2 or 3-star kids at a high school. It's just like a sort of a community identification thing.
If everything goes well, a school gets its coach. A coach gets his staff. the fan base finally gets a new coach that they can be excited about.
There is one power center we've yet to cover, Ty. Have you ever wondered how coaching news leaks before the process is even complete? Well, everyone we talk to is connected, obviously, and gets crumbs from time to time. The key for a reporter is to sort of stress test a theory before taking it seriously. There are a lot of wild rumors. Some of it can come from the agents or prominent boosters, but a lot of them can start simply because they sound fun.
People like this coach, and they think he's like, back when Ogeron didn't get the USC job, people are like, oh, he'll, you know, I don't think he should be the USC or LSU job, but he should probably get like the Purdue job or the whatever. Right. And it's just like, there has to be a fit there. There has to be some kind of relationship. You're not just going to pluck some guy and you're not sure how he would be. And I'm not saying he couldn't have won or recruited at Purdue or couldn't have recruited at Minnesota or whatever, but you know, people just like, I don't think they, you know, like they think of how it actually fits. Like last year, I remember working, you know, I worked on this Friday night show and Clay Travis was like making the case of, you know, Miami should definitely hire Lane Kiffin. And I was like, you just want it because you think it's, for Lane Kiffin's perspective, it makes sense. If you're Miami, I'm not sure it makes any sense.
Right. Bruce is very good at doing this. He's broken more news this year than many reporters will in a lifetime. Knowing who to trust and when to trust them, that's an acquired skill. It's also a little bit awkward.
Here's the thing that sucks. You know, I have people's names in my phone that aren't their real names because I'm sitting in a press box and it comes up as somebody and I'm like, oh shit, they're looking and they see what that, you know, whatever. And I like, these are all my friends. It's not like anybody who's here I don't like, but
by the way, we asked about what kinds of names Bruce uses. He likes to use names in other languages, for example. We also asked him how often his sources are other coaches.
There's a couple guys I know who have been great sources of information where like they're very networked. I broke a story the day Notre Dame was getting killed by Alabama in the national title game. And I get a call from a coach I know really well. And he's like, Scott Schaefer's getting the Syracuse job. And I'm like, this person has never given me anything. Now it's a person I know really well, and he was like, just trust me. And I was like, and the just trust me thing is like, you know, I had this conversation with a friend of mine who's a coach who's now moved further up in the business. And he had once given me some information, which was like, technically it was accurate, but it was not like, I would not have gone with it the way he went. It was basically about somebody interviewing. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey man, you know, you put me out there like that. And I was trying to explain to him, like, I can't screw those things up. I screwed up once. It's a huge hit on me.
Dan, I am shocked that you can't fully trust a coach when he tells you something.
Yeah, I'm stunned, Ty. But on the Schaefer scoop, Bruce decided he would trust his source.
And he's like, you got to trust me. I'm not letting you down. I said, okay. And then I went with it. And, you know, we have this out there. And I remember it was weird because you're at the, whatever that stadium that, you know, in South Florida is, and you could see other reporters, like, because you're in your little pod of press box. I'm like looking around, seeing when it gets out of just some people I know who are probably chasing the story too. And then, you know, I think it was like the next day that person explained to me what the relationship was. And I was like, oh, now I feel better. Everything's relationship based, but it's like, okay, who can I go to confirm this? Who can I go to chase this? Who might know? I spend way more time obsessing about those that aspect of networking.
So there you have it, Dan. Coaching. It is relationship based.
It's about knowing the right people, having plans, building portfolios along the way. Ty, I learned a lot.
Me too. The Solid Verbal is produced, edited, and directed by Dan Rubenstein and me, Ty Hildenbrandt. Support for today's episode comes from Blue Apron and Indochino. Big thanks to our guests, Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated, Stephen Godfrey from SB Nation, and Bruce Feldman from Fox Sports. Special thanks to our trusted advisor, Taylor Schwinn. Subscribe to The Solid Verbal on Apple Podcasts or anywhere fine podcasts are found. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. The Solid Verbal is a production of Solid Verbal Media, LLC.